as well as up north, events up north. You can find things to do throughout northern Minnesota. A list put together by Jennifer Barr, KAXC.org. Support comes from the Children's Discovery Museum in Grand Rapids. They offer a hands-on learning environment for children to develop skills and grow their imagination. With a new bear cave and Ojibwe constellation exhibit and a kid-sized credit union to learn banking concepts. Hours and weekly programming available at cdmkids.org. Stages of the Range Players hold auditions for the ice fishing play September 9th, today from 4:30 to 6:30. It's at Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Virginia. The play was written by Minnesota storyteller Kevin Kling, and the performance dates are in November. And Northern Exposure to Lifelong Learning is presenting a program on New Zealand travel Wednesday, September 10th at 9:30 at the Bagley Public Library. Doors open at 9 o'clock. Coming up at 9 o'clock, it is Headwaters with your host, DJ Dang. More news is coming up next. It's a minute after 6.
Advocates in Los Angeles are reacting to a U.S. Supreme Court ruling that clears the way for Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers to resume random immigration sweeps in the region. As NPR's Adrian Florido reports, the High Court lifted a lower court's order directing agents not to engage in racial profiling.
In July, a federal judge in Los Angeles said immigration agents could not target people based solely on factors like their race, accents, or occupations. Agents had to scale back aggressive roundups in which they'd chased day laborers through hardware store parking lots and rounded up street vendors and car wash workers. The Trump administration asked the Supreme Court to lift that order. The six conservative justices have done so. Their order was brief and unsigned. Armando Gudino is with the LA Worker Center Network.
Immigration agents are now being given the power to profile, stop, detain, and arrest people because of the color of their skin, the language they speak, or the work that they do.
The ACLU has said it'll keep pressing its lawsuit to stop the raids. Adrian Florido, NPR News, Los Angeles.
The Department of Homeland Security has launched operations in Illinois and Massachusetts. From member station WBUR, Simon Rios reports that includes Boston.
Homeland Security officials call it Operation Patriot 2.0, and they say they're cleaning up the mess left by the city's sanctuary policies. Jillian Phillips is a volunteer with a group monitoring ICE actions in Massachusetts.
We are seeing a lot of larger groups of agents. And so we just encourage folks to continue to stay aware, to stay vigilant, to know their rights.
Boston's mayor says no local resources will be co-opted into the mass deportation agenda. For NPR News, I'm Simone Rios in Boston.
Florida's health department wants to remove school mandates for 4 vaccines by December. State health officials say it should be up to parents to decide. From member station WUSF, Carrie Sheridan reports hepatitis B and chickenpox are on the list.
Rana Alyssa, the president of the Florida chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, says these vaccines are safe and necessary.
For example, pregnant women should not be exposed to chickenpox because their unborn babies might have it and it's severe congenital complications.
Other vaccines that Florida could remove from school mandates include Haemophilus influenza type B, or HIB. Dr. Alyssa says that's a bacterial infection that can make young children very sick.
They have like cold symptoms, and all of a sudden they can't even breathe, and they have to be intubated.
Lawmakers would have to act to lift mandates for other vaccines such as polio and measles. For NPR News, I'm Carrie Sheridan in Tampa.
On Wall Street and pre-market trading, Dow futures are down by about 16 points. You're listening to NPR. President Trump says the U.S. Education Department will soon issue guidance on protecting the right to prayer in public schools. But the Education Department has long offered guidance, saying students can pray together during lunch and other free periods. Videos made by artificial intelligence are being used to animate the Bible. As NPR's Jeff Brumfield reports, one company hopes to grab followers while theologians are expressing concerns.
It's called the AI Bible, and it tells Bible stories through machine-generated videos, like this one about the prophet Elijah.
You'll get your showdown, prophet.
The videos made by AI tools often resemble something out of a fantasy action movie. Max Bard is with the company Pray.com, which makes the videos. He says that's kind of the point.
Think of, like, if we were the Marvel universe of faith.
The videos are getting millions of views online, but critics worry they're devoid of spiritual meaning. Brad East is with Christian Abilene University in Texas.
It actually felt like a bad video game.
East says these AI videos rob the Bible of its power. Jeff Brumfield, NPR News.
The Roman Catholic Archdiocese of New Orleans has agreed to a $230 million settlement for survivors of clergy sexual abuse. Lawyers for dozens of survivors who have sued say they're urging their clients to agree to the settlement offer. News reports say the Prime Minister of Nepal has resigned. This comes after deadly clashes yesterday by young protesters. They were angry over the Nepalese government's temporary ban on social media. That ban has been lifted. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Lodestar Foundation, inspired by the principle that helping someone else less fortunate is a path to a happier, healthier, and more meaningful life. Learn more at LodestarFoundation.org.
A lot of times you just need to listen.
This is Beyond Active Duty, Caring for Those Who Served, a series exploring the challenges Minnesota's veterans face, as well as the opportunities and services available to them.
I'm Eric Alness, and I'm a veteran. My career started in 1986 when I went off to the Military Intelligence School at Fort Huachuca, Arizona for 6 months to become an intelligence officer. Working for Major General Larry Shelato, it was a great pleasure. When I was doing legislative work, he gave me a lot of latitude. So really work hard on trying to get a really robust package of things that'll help service members be successful. Probably one of the big signature acts from that was the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program. That's probably saved a lot of lives since it passed in the 2007-8, I would imagine. They have family assistance centers throughout the state that are operating throughout the business week and extended hours when needed that provide those assistance to families that maybe the units can't provide.
Beyond Active Duty, Caring for Those Who Served is produced by EMPERS with support from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, providing our veterans with help. Veterans can find that help online at minnesotaveteran.org.
Morning edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadil in Washington, D.C.
And I'm A. Martinez in Los Angeles, California. Coming up, we'll speak with Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal about a bipartisan sanctions bill he's introduced targeting Russia over the war in Ukraine.
First, Russia has responded to President Trump's own repeated threats of sanctions with stepped-up airstrikes against Ukraine.
In fact, Russia now carries out far more attacks than it did before Trump re-entered the White House in January.
NPR's Greg Myrie recently returned to Washington after a month in Ukraine and joins me now. Good morning, Greg.
Hi, Layla.
So President Trump, you know, he keeps warning Russia he's going to do something. He sets deadlines that come and go. With these stepped up attacks, what is the president saying now?
Well, he says he's still thinking about sanctions, but he's noncommittal. Trump says he expects to speak with Russian leader Vladimir Putin in the next couple days. Now, it's been a month since the two leaders met in Alaska without any movement toward a ceasefire. Trump has been threatening sanctions more or less since March, and he keeps saying he's not happy with Russia, that we'll see what happens in 2 weeks. But his only real action so far has been 50% tariffs on India because it's buying Russian oil. Now, Russia's economy is relatively weak, but oil and gas sales have allowed the country to chug along during the war. Mm. More sanctions would further strain the economy. It's not clear how much pain they would inflict.
Is there any sign the Russian position is changing?
Well, politically, Russia is just not budging. The Kremlin says sanctions will not force Russia to change its stance, and the key demand is still international recognition of Russian control over Ukrainian territory. Militarily, Russia is just becoming more and more aggressive. Russia is able to increase airstrikes on Ukraine because it has ramped up its own domestic drone production. Mm. Before this year, Layla, Russia was firing perhaps a couple dozen drones into Ukraine on a typical tropical night. This year, the number has soared. It first began hitting 100 or more a night, and now many hundreds. Sunday was the heaviest assault yet, more than 800 drones. And Russia appears capable of sustaining this pace and has ignored Trump's calls without suffering any consequences.
How is Ukraine dealing with these intensified attacks?
Well, Ukraine has to scramble every night. Russia typically attacks 3, 4, 5 cities, and these tend to be different cities every night. Ukraine responds with sending up helicopters, fighter jets, electronic jamming, machine guns, and increasingly Ukraine is making its own defensive drones that shoot down Russia's incoming offensive drones. Now, Ukraine still takes down the majority of these Russian drones, but some get through, and they're often followed by missiles, which inflict even greater damage.
Now, Greg, you were in Ukraine when Trump hosted Putin last month here in the U.S. How is that summit viewed in Ukraine? And at this point, are there prospects for peace?
Well, not really. Ukrainians were deeply skeptical with the Trump-Putin meeting. Ukrainians are exhausted by the war. They are open to negotiations to end the conflict, but they just don't think Putin will make any concessions. Now, they're even supportive of Trump's peace efforts, and they were pleased when he hosted President Volodymyr Zelensky at the White House just a few days after the Putin meeting. But the vast majority of Ukrainians believe Putin is just stringing Trump along by buying time, hoping that Russia can win a war of attrition. Here in Washington, there's still this strong focus that Trump might do something that could lead to ceasefire negotiations. But in Ukraine, I just heard people saying they have to depend on themselves. They can't count on the U.S. or others.
That's NPR's Greg Myrie. Thank you for your reporting, Greg.
Sure thing, Layla.
For more on what another round of U.S. sanctions on Russia might look like, Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut is joining us. He introduced the Sanctioning Russia Act of 2025 with Republican Senator Lindsey Graham earlier this year. And he is with me in Studio 31 this morning to talk about it. Senator, thank you for being here. Good morning.
Good morning. Wonderful to be with you.
So, Senator, what would this bill do if passed that's different than the sanctions we've seen from the U.S. in the past that really haven't made a huge difference when it comes to this war?
There have been no real sanctions in the past to make a difference. And what this bill would do is impose scorching sanctions, not only on Russia, but even more importantly, on China, India, Brazil, all the buyers of Russian oil and gas who are fueling Putin's war economy. And the sanctions would, in fact, be avoided by those countries if they simply stop fueling the war machine that is bombing relentlessly, night after night, innocent civilians in Ukraine. Let's be very clear about what's happening. The Russians are not targeting military installations. Mm. They are bombing hospitals, homes, schools, the government center, 800 drones and 13 missiles in that deadly attack that was just described, one of the deadliest of the war. And that meeting in Anchorage between Putin and Trump, I think, was a travesty. It just drove home the need to stop warning and thinking about sanctions, but actually acting, because Putin is a thug. He understands force and only force, military or economic.
Do you know if the president would be supportive of this bill if it passed?
I believe the president should be supportive. The time has come for action. The president's been mocked and played by Putin, and I think the president ought to be furious that Putin has stalled and stonewalled in this way. And about this bill, there are 85 co-sponsors, mm-hmm. evenly divided, Democrat and Republican, which I think shows the level of support in the Congress for these kinds of sanctions that would change behavior in China, India, and Brazil.
Would there be knock-on effects, though, by sanctioning India, China, Brazil, trading partners of the U.S.? You know, it also proposes 500% tariffs on the European Union. Would that unintentionally then harm the U.S.?
There would be no harm to the United States, either in oil prices or any other way, because these countries could avoid them simply by doing the right thing. They know that they are making blood money. India is reselling this oil at higher prices and making profits. So there would be no economic or political effects. But the important point here is that Ukraine really, at the end of the day, needs security guarantees. Mm-hmm. It needs more military aid as well as these economic sanctions. So it can be the kind of iron porcupine that Russia could never swallow. It needs security guarantees from the United States and European allies, because our security interests, our national defense is involved here. Putin will keep going. If he's able to have dinner in Kyiv and conquer Ukraine, he will keep going against other allies, whether it's Finland, Sweden, or others.
Well, let me ask you about that. I mean, you said there weren't really sanctions before, but there have been 18 rounds of sanctions from the EU. There have been asset freezes, sanctions on individuals from the U.S. up until January when the Biden administration left. And the Government Accountability Office released a report that concluded Russia has found ways to circumvent U.S. sanctions generally. Are you concerned that if the bill passes and these new sanctions go into place, that Russia could just do the same thing and continue its behavior?
Really important point. There needs to be tough enforcement, really stringent application and implementation. For example, our bill covers the Russian shadow fleet that is ferrying this oil and gas to their customers like the Chinese and Indians and Brazilians. The bill has to provide and does for enforcement, and the administration has to take it that way.
What would enforcement look like?
Enforcement would look like using the world's financial system more effectively. You've mentioned sanctions. There have been efforts to sanction, but under both administrations, there have been, in effect, failures to use all of the devices and tools that are available to achieve enforcement. It's not just about words on paper, legislation. It's about effective implementation. And, you know, we need to use those seized Russian assets, $300 billion worth, to help Ukraine recover, but also to arm Ukraine. So, again, it has the security guarantee. Those assets have not been used as they could be.
We had a story on this program just last month that reported the U.S.'s second largest supplier of fertilizer was Russia. In 2022, the year Russia launched its full-scale invasion of Ukraine, the U.S. purchased nearly $2 billion worth of fertilizer from Russia. If the U.S. wants to truly cripple Russia's economy, should the U.S. be continuing to be spending billions of dollars on things like fertilizer from Russia?
We need to avoid dependence on Russia for fertilizer or any other commodity, if that's going to be a means for Russia to exert pressure on us. But the main point is, we have been played. The president has been stalled and stonewalled and mocked by Putin. And now is the time for action. I'm hoping that even as early as this week, he may take additional action on his own. Mm-hmm. But this bill says to the world, we are united. Congress is behind sanctions that the president may impose. It is supportive, and it provides a legally bulletproof way to impose those sanctions targeted, and I emphasize targeted, on countries that fuel Russia's war machine by buying its oil and gas.
That's Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal from Connecticut. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you.
This is NPR News.
It's 6:19. Thanks for tuning in. It is the Tuesday morning show on People Powered, KAXE. Coming up, we're learning about one of the biggest conservation experiments in the world that is underway in New Zealand in an effort to eradicate invasive species that pose a threat to the country's biodiversity. Stay tuned for that story. Stay tuned also for student phonology before 7 o'clock. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. Check out our website, kaxe.org. Lots of stories there, including art stories, like Andrew Duzingle's story on Marley Call, a retrospective that is currently at the Bemidji State University Tally Gallery, and Grand Rapids launching community conversations to build stronger schools. You can listen to that conversation right now at our website. It's kaxe.org. Support comes from Itasca County Health and Human Services hosting the 17th annual Community Connect Thursday, September 18th from 11 to 3 at Yanmar Arena in Grand Rapids. Featuring over 50 social service agencies providing info on housing, energy, county assistance, and more. All are welcome. Weather around our region, we're going to see some clouds, some possible rain this morning, gradually going to be clearing, and then temperatures from 70 to 75 degrees. Overnight, expect 50 to 55.
Comes from this station. And from Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, a personalized program that bases rates on safe driving habits at progressive.com. Not available in California or from all agents. From the Cy Sims Foundation, since 1985, supporting advances in science, education, and the arts towards a fairer, more just, and civil society. More information is available at cysimsfoundation.org. From Betterment, an automated investing platform that strives to make it easy to be invested. Learn more at betterment.com. Investing involves risk. And from the Skoll Foundation, dedicated to powering social innovators to transform the world. Learn more at skoll.org.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm E. Martinez.
And I'm Leila Faudin. Good morning. One of the most ambitious conservation projects in the world is underway in New Zealand. The country's unique birds are disappearing largely because of invasive species that were brought there by humans. So the country is trying to kill off millions of those invasive animals. Lauren Summer from NPR's Climate Desk reports from New Zealand about the effort to save the country's most famous bird.
The kiwi is round and fuzzy and totally flightless. New Zealanders are even known as kiwis. But despite its fame, many people in New Zealand have never actually seen one.
Once you see them, you just love them.
Claire Travers works for the Whakatane Kiwi Trust, a group that helps protect kiwi. She says it's hard to find them because kiwi only come out at night, and because now they're rare.
What we're going to do now is go out and locate a young chick.
This morning, Travers is checking on a 5-week-old chick that was just released into the wild. It's wearing a radio transmitter, so the team is scanning to figure out where it is.
Oh, look, it's getting stronger there now.
The jungle in Whakatane, New Zealand is dense, full of trees and giant ferns.
Okay, here we go.
Kiwi are in underground burrows this time of day, but we do find signs of them around.
So you can see these holes?
Keturah Bouchard volunteers with the Kiwi Project. She's pointing to a bunch of small puncture holes in the dirt.
So they'll stick their beak in and they kind of sometimes swirl it around a little.
It's how they find worms and bugs to eat. After searching all morning, the team zeroes in on the chick.
I got it.
It's a female North Island brown kiwi. A tiny fluff ball with a long beak.
We're checking her eyes and ears.
They do a health check. She's lost a little weight.
All right. You want them a bit stroppy. You want them a bit feisty. So,
that was a good sign.
Yeah. But you see how small she is?
So small.
She's living in here all on her own, just doing her thing.
Young kiwi are very vulnerable. Only 5% of them survive here, Travers says, and it's mostly due to one predator.
Stoats are the primary predator for the young chicks.
Stoats are related to weasels and ferrets. They were brought here by European settlers in the late 1800s to control rabbits, which settlers also brought to New Zealand. Stoats are only about a foot long, but they're basically like the Terminator.
They are very smart. Very, very smart. I mean, a stoat can climb really well, get through very small holes, will take on a predator that's much, much bigger than it is.
Kiwi didn't evolve with predators like this, Travers says, because New Zealand had no land mammals aside from bats. And since kiwi can't fly, they have no chance against an invasive species like stoats. Stoats pick them off right when the kiwi chicks leave the nest.
You find a leg with a little transmitter attached where a stoat has dragged it and eaten the rest of it. That's the heartbreak for me.
So to save kiwi, the group is trying to get rid of stoats.
Got a DOC 200 here. That's the trap mechanism.
Gabe Hayes is predator control coordinator for the Whakatane Kiwi Trust. She's pointing to a wire mesh box with a trap at the back.
Which, when it's depressed, goes off and a heavy bar comes down and crushes and kills the animal instantly.
Pace says the traps have gone through animal welfare testing to make sure they're as humane as possible. Her team has set hundreds of traps targeting stoats.
They are such hard animals to capture. I mean, it's easy to when you start, but when you get to this stage in our project, we've been going for like over 20 years, you're really down to the hardcore.
Hardcore stoats are the ones that have learned to avoid traps, and they teach their young to avoid traps too. Travers says it's a battle, but one they can't walk away from.
If we weren't doing what we were doing as a nation for kiwi, within the next two generations, they'd be gone.
This trapping project is part of a nationwide goal, one that is pretty colossal. New Zealand wants to get rid of invasive predators by 2050. That includes getting rid of three species of rats, which eat native bird chicks and eggs, and brush-tailed possums, an Australian animal that devours native trees. In all, it will mean eradicating millions of animals.
Yeah, it's bold and ambitious, but I believe that's what we need to do in the world.
Brent Bevan manages the Predator Free 2050 program at New Zealand's Department of Conservation. He says there are small pockets, mostly islands off the coast, where invasive predators have been eliminated.
Because when you take predators away, that, you know, all of our birds breed really well, the forest grows further, it becomes a thriving ecosystem without that constant pressure from these introduced animals.
Still, right now, Bevan says New Zealand doesn't have the technology to eliminate all the predators. They're working on it, he says. Things like traps that use artificial intelligence to target certain species, or using genetic research to find poisons that will only work on one animal. Technology could also drive down the cost, which will likely be more than $100 million per year. But given the high body count of the project, what about the debate over animal rights?
There's this sort of standard mainstream animal ethics view, which is maybe we shouldn't ever harm cute, sentient, charismatic mammals.
Emily Park studies the ethics of conservation at the University of Auckland in New Zealand. She says that hasn't been a big sticking point because the New Zealand public is largely supportive, according to polling.
The ethical questions that arise are really less about, is it okay to do this? And more about what values should we be upholding as we do it? Even if we all agree with the aim of a predator-free New Zealand, we might disagree about ways of achieving that aim.
Animal rights groups like the SPCA say they want to see the development of non-lethal methods of control. Bevan of New Zealand's Department of Conservation says you have to consider that New Zealand's birds are already dying.
If we don't take action, we are killing our native wildlife by omission. Choosing not to take an action is an action. So either way, something's going to die based on the decisions we make.
That's the tricky part of the biodiversity crisis, he says, given how much humans have already altered the planet. Lauren Sommer, NPR News.
That story was produced by NPR's Ryan Kelman. This is NPR News.
The fires that ripped through LA earlier this year destroyed thousands of homes, leaving homeowners a choice. Rebuild, relocate, or...
Thought of moving a house, even a house that's like super beat up, it's like, oh yeah, bring it on.
Why some homeowners are choosing to move homes slated to be demolished rather than build a new home. That's on the next All Things Considered from NPR News.
Bye.
strange and ominous for a Tuesday morning. It is almost 6:30. I'm Heidi Holton. I'm John Latimer. And we've got... I think. Yeah. We got to wake John up today. I've been told. Yeah. Woo. Too many sports for you last night. I stayed up later than I probably should have. And I spent the yesterday wandering around with students in Virginia and Cherry. I had a wonderful time. We had a great experience at Cherry School. They have a little wetlands in their backyard, and there were dozens of little frogs that were obviously just, they had been tadpoles probably 2 months ago. And there were wood frogs, gray tree frogs, and spring peepers. So the kids got to look at three different species of frogs, all of them very, very small, but very active. So, yeah, we had just had a wonderful time. That's great. Yeah. I believe their teacher was at our festival enjoying herself. Oh, Allison? From Cherry. Yeah, Allison was there. Yeah, good. So many people coming up and talking about what they love on KEXC and enjoying music and meeting new people. It was a great event. Thank you for being there. Thank you for supporting it or telling folks about it. It's one of the things that we do here along with connections with classrooms. John and Charlie get out there. They meet with students and then we hear from them on Tuesday mornings and other days because so many students are now engaged in nature. And well, not now, they have been for 40 years. Yeah. Because of the work here. So thanks, as always, John, for going out there and getting new kids to like nature. It's a hateful business, but somebody's got to do it. Little kids excited about things like spring peepers? Well, that's pretty exciting. Yeah, that's kind of, you know, it really is energizing to be out with a bunch of young kids and show them things and introduce them to things in nature that they might otherwise overlook. And it was, it's always a lot of fun. Coming up on National Native News, we're learning about rural Alaska, where there are a growing number of cases involving young teens in small, remote indigenous communities who are sexually exploited online. Stay tuned for that story and how FBI investigators are there trying to get a change to the bottom of it. We've got live music in our region, including Rachel Kilgore at Co House in Grand Rapids on Thursday night at 7:30 and GB Layton at the Minor Family Pavilion in Grand Rapids Friday night at 7 p.m. Wonderful. And support for KAXE comes from the Sewing Room, hosting the Cultivating Communities Summit, a 2-day gathering to explore belonging, workplace inclusion, environmental justice, and more, taking place at the Gitche Zibi Center for Arts in Brainerd, September 22nd and 23rd. Registration available at sewingroom.org. And that is S-O-W, sewing, not S-E-W or S-O-I-N-G. Is there a sewing? Sewing. What happened at... It's going to be a fun day with John today. Oh, boy. Yeah, sorry. No. I'm working hard at waking up. Now, this isn't a question for you, this question of the week. Or maybe it is. Maybe you can give us some advice. But it's fall. This is a time where people are kind of... might be looking for something new to watch. And you can't always trust what you know, you find online about what might be good because it's just ads. So kind of assembling a list of your favorite TV shows as we head into the fall. They can be new or old. We'd love to hear your picks. You can text us at 218-326-1234. Simpsons? Still? Probably. Always? Probably, yeah. Oh, maybe Rocky and Bullwinkle. I don't know. It's been a while. I don't know. There's something about TV, especially like I've never really sat down and watched like an episode of NCIS, but it always seems to me that in all of those shows, you look at the stars and no matter what situation they're going to be put in, they're going to be there and alive at the end of the program. So I just sort of,
I'd rather watch something that has a bit, you know, I wouldn't expect stars to be killed off in a program, but like I enjoy sports because I don't know the outcome at the beginning.
Huh.
Now, if I watch a program like a regular TV show, you see the stars at the start. You know that all of them are probably going to be there at the end. In a basketball game or a football game or a hockey game, you know, the stars are all out there, but you have no idea what's going to happen. There could be victory for the underdog. You just don't know. You got to watch and see. And for those of you who didn't stay up last night, maybe watched the first half of the Vikings-Bears game and went to bed thinking, well, it's going to be a long season. Well, it is going to be a long season, but the Vikings pulled it out last night, 27-24, and it was a pretty surprising fourth quarter end to a game that at some points I had thought, maybe I should just go to bed. But I hung with it, and they hung in there and managed to right the ship at the end of the game. It was a pretty exciting finish.
Hmm. And you got to see the Lynx game where they played the Golden Valkyries.
And you...
Sorry.
You just didn't destroy it. You just... I had not realized, because I was here at the Music Fest on Saturday, I hadn't realized that that's when that game had been played and that I was watching a replay of that game. So I had no knowledge of the outcome, so I was pretty involved and kept flipping back and forth between the two games so that I could keep track. And the Lynx won again.
Yeah, it was a fun game as always. I don't know how to choose who's my favorite. You know, Alanis Smith and Dejanay Carrington were on the bench, but I don't think they're not on an injured list exactly.
Okay.
Is what I heard, but we'll see. We're getting into playoffs soon.
Yeah.
But Heidman, I just love the energy when she comes in. And I don't know how she does it at like 5'7", maybe.
Yeah, yeah. She and Courtney Williams are a pair.
They just made Vogue magazine this whole...
Did they?
Yeah.
Their stud buds thing?
Yep, they sure did. It was a great spread. Beautiful photos of the two of them and kind of laying out their friendship and how they've supported each other through their careers. Kind of a dream come true to finally be on the same team.
Yeah.
And so great for Minnesota. So the next game is tonight. We are in Indiana playing Indiana Fever. They just made the playoffs. But these games don't matter much until we get right into the playoffs.
Right. So. They're assured of their position in the playoffs. They're the number one team in the league. And deservedly so. They won 33 or 34 games, and they have two left to play. They are well ahead of their nearest competitors, 5 or 6 games.
Yeah, 33-9 is their record.
33-9.
And they're playing the Fever, who are 23-20.
Yeah.
And they also just made the, they had just made the playoffs as
now,
well.
The Fever are the team that won the rights to draft Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
And she is injured and not able to play this year.
Yeah.
But she's going to make a huge difference once she gets healthy and on the floor. She's going to be to be reckoned with.
Yeah, I think she makes a difference from the bench even, how involved she is in the game.
Yeah.
It's really fun to see. So tonight the Lynx will play. Hope you get a chance to see them. If not now, then once they get into the playoffs. We have high hopes for another ring. I don't know what the right word is to say, but another win.
Yeah.
It'd be the fifth for...
Another championship if they can prevail. There are some really good teams and some teams that have really come on strong in the second half. So they'll have their work cut out for them.
I know. I'm really worried about Las Vegas. They lost to them recently, and that was a tough game. If Asia Wilson, I don't know how she does it. That's going to be
incredible
really
player.
Tough.
Yeah. Well, there are incredible players on all teams, and they will rise up to the occasion, or they will fall short. And that's the beauty of sports. You don't know who's going to show up and how well they're going to play, and what odd individual last night for the Vikings. Second string guy named Wilson, linebacker, Blake Cashman pulled a muscle in his leg or tore a hamstring or something, had to come out of the game. This guy comes in, he makes several great tackles, he blocks a punt near the end of the game. He just was, you know, he rose to the occasion, and it was wonderful to see. It was exciting, yeah.
Coming up before 7, we're going to bring you some phenology talkbacks. What are you seeing out there? We'd love to hear from you this morning. What nature changes? You can text 218-326-1234.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Alaska, there are a growing number of cases involving young teens in small remote indigenous communities who are sexually exploited online. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, the FBI believes one North Slope man who was indicted this summer could have other victims.
After FBI investigators arrested Robert Segovin and Wainwright this July for child exploitation, they wanted to be sure the North Slope man didn't have any other victims. In charging documents, they showed evidence of how Segovin, who is 31, used social media chats to badger teenage girls into sending him sexually explicit pictures of themselves. The victims were as young as 12, 13, and 15. Chloe Martin, a spokesperson for the FBI's Alaska field office, says, although this case takes place in one of the most isolated places in the nation, it is not beyond the FBI's reach.
No matter where a child lives, they deserve safety, support, and justice.
Martin says sexual exploitation occurs in large cities and small communities alike, and it helps to end the abuse when victims come forward.
Victims may be eligible for certain services, potentially restitution, and rights under federal and or state law. And of course, all identities of these victims will be kept confidential.
The FBI's Anchorage field office and the North Slope Borough's police department worked together on this case, which came to light last October after a North Slope Borough police officer took a complaint from a 15-year-old girl. She told the officer Segovin had asked for images of her breasts and private parts. In the course of the investigation, he learned that other children had received similar messages and that a 13-year-old had sent Segovin nude photos. The FBI is asking anyone who has information about Segovin's alleged crimes to contact the Anchorage FBI field office or go online at tips.fbi.gov. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Hundreds of First Nations chiefs recently gathered in Winnipeg for their annual meeting. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, most of the talk was about the impact on their communities of new laws allowing the fast-tracking of major infrastructure projects.
The concerns brought to the Winnipeg meeting focused on how First Nations rights were being challenged by the push by Ottawa to have major projects moved forward. Many chiefs are angry that the new law, Bill C-5, was pushed through with only 7 days to review and comment on it. Cindy Woodhouse-Nepinak is the National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations.
The way the act was introduced has caused concern for many chiefs. This assembly is an opportunity for chiefs to deliberate and to provide direction moving forward.
But 2 days into the gathering, the chiefs voted down a pitch to include First Nations infrastructure ventures in the government's national plan to fast-track major projects like pipelines and mining of precious metals. Resolutions didn't get the needed 60% support. Some said passing the resolution would have been supporting the federal legislation and could have put their rights in jeopardy. The vice chief of the Federation of Sovereign Indigenous Nations said major project discussions must include Indigenous people because these decisions affect treaty rights by impacting their ability to exercise rights to hunt, fish, trap, and pass on their way of life. More than 600 chiefs from across the country attended the meeting. Other issues on the table included talks on child welfare reform, native policing, health care, the drug crisis, and the lack of proper housing on reserves. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding from the Annenberg Foundation and the Ford Foundation. Coming up, we've got our album of the week.
coming from Atlanta, Georgia. We've been getting some texts from folks since the Riverfest on Saturday. We heard from Gene from Chisholm. Riverfest was great. My favorite was Courtney Barnett and her band. How did you guys ever get her up here? That would be Kari Hedlund got her up here.
Yeah, and she was wonderful. I enjoyed her music very much. Yeah, she played a great set.
Yeah. Thanks for coming to Grand Rapids Riverfest. There's great photos from it that's at our website, or actually our Facebook page, or Instagram is a better place to see it. Lots of things happening.
Of course it's on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Big overview from above. We have drone photos too at night with that full moon and the double rainbow. I mean.
Yeah, there were some spectacular moments. Do you remember last year the moon came up?
Yeah.
Right at the, I don't know how Kari arranges for the full moon to show up each year, but that's good.
Good time of year.
Actually, I guess technically for those of you who actually keep track, the full moon was the next night. But man, when it's 97%, it's pretty hard to see the 3% that's missing. It's okay.
And then once it moves right over the stage, oh my God.
Yeah, that was stunning.
A couple of things going on in our communities today. That includes Harmony Co-op in Bemidji. They host their Harvest Fair from 12 to 6. Events include connections with local farmers, local foods, live music, and more. And Kutiaska Community Action hosts a Big View conversation today from 11 to 1 at Community Presbyterian Church in Grand Rapids. You can learn more about First Call for Help. They have a mission to provide crisis intervention and referral services. You should pre-register. Email alicem@kutaska.org. We're going to take a listen now to our album of the week. It's called Arrivals and Departures, Adventures of Captain Kurt. It's by Curtis Harding. Fourth album from Atlanta, Georgia soul singer Curtis Harding. A sci-fi concept album that brings classical soul to a space opera. I don't really understand that. This is going to be...
We're going to have to listen to find out.
Interesting to listen to. Inspired by time on the road, Harding envisioned a character who gets lost in space and travels through different galaxies to return home. Here's There She Goes.
Thank you.
This is our album of the week. Curtis Harding, his concept album, sci-fi concept album, bringing classic soul to a space opera. He worked with acclaimed composer Steve Hackman to bring movie score strings to the soul music world. Song there called There She Goes. You can find more information on it at kaxe.org. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. Looks like we're going to have dense fog in the next few days into the evenings and early mornings. Chance of showers and thunderstorms early today, then clearing, high 70 to 74. Lows tonight, 49 to 56 around our region. Patchy fog again tomorrow, mostly cloudy, becoming sunny, high 72 to 75.
We receive support from UPM Bland and Paper, integrating bio and forest industries into a sustainable and innovation-driven future. More information at upmpaper.com. It is coming up on time for our talkback segment, and we are just beginning to get out and deal with our schools, and we're going to get more and more as we go forward. But for today, we have one report, which is from our friends at Little Falls Middle School. Funding for student phenology is provided in part by the Minnesota Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. Phenology talkbacks are produced by Charlie Mitchell. And as I mentioned, our lone report this morning comes from Chad Caddett's class at Little Falls Middle School.
This is Kylie and Cora reporting from Little Falls Middle School. This is our phenology report for the week of September 7th.
One of the first noticeable signs of fall here are the bright red leaves on the sumac shrubs.
There were large groups of nighthawks passing through our area before sundown early last week.
We have also seen a surge in the number of rose-breasted grosbeaks at our feeders.
We have only seen female or juvenile hummingbirds in the past week, typically fighting with hornets over the feeders.
Butter and eggs are blooming in our roadsides and fields.
We saw a chipping sparrow feeding a juvenile under a bird feeder, and it seemed like it was late in the year before them to still need to be fed.
Another early sign of fall was a woolly bear caterpillar found by a classmate.
The bald-faced hornets and yellow jackets were busy this weekend feeding on pop, lemonade, and other sweet treats that were spilled in the Little Falls craft fair.
Green darners and meadowhawks are still common sights here, and if you go out in the morning, you can get a close-up look at them as they are too cold to fly away.
We are still seeing white-tailed bucks with velvet on their antlers.
Classmates have found tiger salamanders and prairie skinks in this week among with young snapping turtles emerging from their nests.
Another group that appears to be migrating through are the flickers, as they have started to show up in larger numbers lately.
One alarming report came from a student who noticed an increase in the amount of dead fish she was seeing in the Mississippi River near her home.
That is our report for this week. Until next week, keep exploring, keep discovering, and keep connecting with the great outdoors.
Thanks, kids. What a great report, you guys. That's Kylie and Cora from Little Falls Middle School, and lots of good notes in there about a lot of interesting things. I was especially interested in the white-tailed bucks with velvet. I had a report yesterday from one of the students in Virginia who had also seen a young buck with velvet still on his antlers. Green darners and meadowhawks. I was out on Saturday, and it was just a little bit cool. This was before I came to the Riverfest, but there were not that many dragonflies out that day, and Sunday the same could be said. There were not many dragonflies out for where I was, but I would expect to see green darners and meadowhawks this time of year for sure. The meadowhawks, of course, those are the males are going to be the little red guys, and the females will be golden, and there should be a lot of those around. I've had reports and actually seen them as late as November, so don't give up on dragonflies. There'll still be a few more around. Turtles definitely moving, kind of heading back toward their nests and whatnot, and then I don't know about the student who saw a bunch of dead fish on the Mississippi River. That's kind of unfortunate. We hate to hear that. And I think if you go to Instagram, you'll see the pictures. You'll find out that that Chad Kaditz, the teacher in Little Falls, is one of our, I would say, preeminent artists. His drawings of butter and eggs, the little flowers that are blooming right now, and the yellow jackets. He just does a superior job. He's such a good artist. It's fun to look at his drawings. So check those out on Instagram. You won't be disappointed. That's, what is it, Little Falls Subtext?
Yeah, you can. I was just looking. You can just do grab the little search thing and put in Little Falls, and you'll see Little Falls Phenology.
All right.
Pop right up. We also just had a text, Noah from near Britt. He said, our family had a great time at Riverfest. I was fortunate to meet some local celebrities, Roger Radio, Scott Hall, and my own personal hero, John Latimer.
Yeah, Noah and I had a nice conversation. Noah, good morning. Yeah, thank you. That was a great moment.
Sorry I missed you, Noah. Also, on the phenology topic, we had a visit from a somewhat rare animal here in the North Woods, the Franklin's ground squirrel.
Oh, yeah.
Sent a photo.
I'm familiar with the little Franklin's ground squirrel. I have one in my yard, and he's pretty shy. I more often see his little dirt piles than I see him, but every once in a while. So this is a, you might mistake it for a gopher. It's a small, uniformly brown ground squirrel. It doesn't have any stripes. The other ground squirrel that we have around here is called the 13-lined ground squirrel, and for good reason. It has a lot of stripes on its back, 13 apparently. I've never had one still enough to be able to count that far, but at any rate, the Franklin's is a really interesting little ground squirrel, and I'm surprised to hear that there are some in the Britt area, which is a good stretch up the road from here and further north. So I'm pleased to find that out. We also got a email from Tom from Grand Rapids, and Tom wrote, on Saturday there was a broad-winged hawk sitting on a telephone pole by his barn. He's been around for several weeks, helping out with the rabbit situation. When should we expect this useful bird to probably migrate? Well, it should happen pretty soon. Those guys are pretty dependent on rabbits, among other things. They they eat a lot of garter snakes as well. I often see broad-winged hawks carrying off garter snakes. But yeah, they're definitely good to have in your neighborhood. And if they're taking out the rabbits, more power to them. Boy, I could feed a pretty big flock of hawks at my house with all the rabbits I have. And I would be happy to volunteer some of them to be food for the next generation of hawks. That would be fine by me. Yeah, Tom, I would say, you know, before the end of the month is typically when I see my last broad-winged hawks. I don't usually have records of them as late as October.
We're going to be talking more about birds and fall migration coming up at 8:40 this morning. Pam Perry's going to join us, and she wants to talk about the migration, and she'll also be talking flicker.